Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
You're listening to the best of Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shordell. Heard every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. Feel free to reach out to us at fire@whli.com.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shordell, and I'm here with co-host Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Tom. You look fresh and relaxed.
As a daisy. Yeah. I spent 5 days in Florida. I'd like to tell you it was relaxing. I did learn something, though. I learned that at my advanced age, 36 holes a day for 5 days is probably a little more than I should be playing because
really?
My scores went precipitously up.
See, it's funny when I say you look relaxed because for me, golf is relaxing for the first hole. It's, for me, very taxing to stay attentive and pay attention to what I'm doing. Mm. It's a struggle to keep up the accuracy in your game or the...
Yeah, golf is really one of the two most difficult things I ever tried to get good at. And it's such an exacting game. I mean, the margins of error are so small. You know, you could be a 16th of an inch off, you know, on your angle coming down or the club face angle, and it's going to send the ball like 30 yards in the wrong direction. It's really a very difficult thing. I don't think people who don't play golf realize how good some of those guys are, the pros. I mean, because we played the Bear Trap course at PGA National 2 days after the tournament was over. We arrived on Sunday night. The tournament was still going on. It was a madhouse there, you know. And so the course was still in you know, championship condition. And I want to tell you, it was hard. I played okay. I played pretty well, actually, on it. But first day. The second day, I had my moments. I had a couple of triple bogeys. That doesn't help anything. And but I played the Bear Trap, which is the three signature holes of the place where the tournament's usually won or lost, you know. And two of them are par threes. They're all over water. And they have a par four that's over water. So three difficult holes, and I played them pretty well. My partner, Dave, on the other hand, you know, who loves golf, but golf doesn't love him. He had one of the greatest lines. We were there the second day. So we're going out for the afternoon round. So the routine is, you know, we get there. It's like, you know, we get up. It's 18 holes, a light lunch, 18 holes. You know, he drinks beer. I drink wine. We have a beer, a glass of wine, watch a little thing, take a shower, out to dinner, back home, beer and wine, you know, rinse and repeat for 5 days. So it's, you know, it's pretty like Groundhog Day every day, you know. So the second day, we were about to go out for the second round, and he says, can you do me a favor and go in and get me a dozen balls? I'm like, what are you, 12? I'm not, you know. So he says, no, it's not that. He says, I bought a dozen this morning. I'm embarrassed to go back so soon. You know? I said, you lost all 12 this morning? He goes, no, 14. I took two more out of my bag. You know, I was crying, you know. So he was, you know, paying caddies to go in and get the balls for him because he was
I can only relate so well. First of all, for some reason, I'm pretty good at getting out of a sand trap. Unfortunately, that means that I'm in the sand trap a lot.
No, you got a lot of practice.
But a part of the beauty of golfing with my friends down in Florida is they help me locate the ball because I don't know where it goes.
No idea.
I hear usually a ping, which
a
is
knock
the
on a tree or something.
You know, bouncing off somebody's. We usually play in communities, so usually bouncing off somebody's enclosed patio area. So it's either off the aluminum top or the screening.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it was. I could have this wrong. I think it was either Lee Trevino or Sam Snead said golf is the perfect way to screw up a nice walk. You know, kind of. Every time I'm out there, I'm like, yeah, they had something there, and they did. It was fun. We had a good time. We went out to eat. You know, I had been to Palm Beach Gardens before. We played there once before. So there's a strip on PGA Boulevard where they have this like kind of a So it was like a high-end retail shop place, you know, kind of like Miracle Mile, I guess you could, you know, in Manhasset. And they have a bunch of different restaurants. So, you know, we don't feel like driving all over the place. We're tired anyway. And, you know, we're not going to behave ourselves because the girls are here, you know. So we stay close to home, you know, whatever. And I went to a couple of interesting restaurants. So the first night we're there, my friend Dave, who's a dyed-in-the-wool meat guy. I mean.
Yeah, you always say that. He's a steak guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he eats like steaks smothered in lamb chops with like with like pork on the side, and his cholesterol is like 62. I eat like broccoli, you know what I mean, and mine's like 487. It's just whatever. Anyway, so I said, well, let's get the steak thing out of the way because we got there kind of late. We get in about 5 o'clock, plane landed about 5. By the time we get checked in, it was 6:15, 6:30, something like that. We had to go get some provisions. He's diabetic, so he needs certain things, you know, and. So we did that, and we went to Capital Grill. Have you been to Capital Grill?
I have. I actually, that's a friendly argument Carrie and I have. She loves Ruth's Chris. I've been to the Capital Grill, and I don't know. It appeals to me a little bit more.
Me too. I'm in your camp on that one. I don't dislike Ruth's Chris. I just find it to be okay. The first one I ever went to was I went to the original. In New Orleans, and it got the name. I don't know. We may have talked about this before, but it was called Chris Steakhouse. That was the original name of it. And when the Chris family sold it to Ruth Fertel, who has the she's the
the
queen, she named it Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. That's how that all started because it's kind of an odd thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I've been to that one, and I've been to the one over in Roosevelt Field, and I've been to one in Florida.
There is one thing about Ruth's Chris. There is consistency. They usually put out a good meal. That's why there's different flavors at the ice cream store.
Yeah, I find it to be a level down from Capital Grill. I'm not a big steakhouse guy because I don't eat it much, you know, and I don't go. I think steakhouses are gourmet restaurants for people who know nothing about food. And I don't mean that as a knock. I just mean it as an explanation. If you're real foodie, you know, that's probably not for you. You know what I mean? You're going to be your first choice, I should say.
But you've got me all very intrigued. I'm curious. Tom Shawdell goes to a steak restaurant. What cut of meat does he go for?
Well, you know, that's always the struggle. And I'm like, when I got there, and I got to go on record before we even get to that. I think they do a great job. I mean, from just a restaurant standpoint, the people are well-trained. Their wine list is fine. I don't think it's as well thought out as it could be, but that's, you know, an opinion coming from a wine geek. They have all the usual suspects on the list, just like every other steakhouse. But they do a real good job. I mean, the service was good. The people were friendly. Bread was warm. I mean, all the things that the little things that you kind of expect out of a good restaurant, they hit on every one of them. Place is clean. It's, bathrooms are great. You know, yada, yada, yada. It's great. So anyway, we get there and, I can tell you what Dave's going to eat. He's going to have Clams Casino. He's going to have a New York strip, side of mashed potatoes and a side of cream spinach. Every time I ever go out with him to a steakhouse, that's what he has. So I'm like, let me guess, you having a Clams Casino? How'd you know? kind of thing.
See, I could go with that, but I would go with the shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
And I would probably go with the hash browns rather than
and
the
yeah. So anyway, I'm looking at the menu, and I can't find it. I said, well, when in Rome, let me just do I won't eat steak for the rest of the year, but at least for the rest of the trip. So I said, well, let me just, I'll do the when in Rome thing here. So I'm looking around. And there were two things that got me, and I don't remember what the other one was, but marinated sirloin, whatever. But they had this like surf and turf thing, filet mignon and lobster tail. So she goes, have that. I said, okay. So I had, I had burrata, because I'm a little sucker for burrata. And Dave
me
had
too.
Tuna tartare.
Oh, we love that.
Thought it was great. I had the burrata. Burrata was fine. And then so it came out two small cuts of filet mignon. With two small lobster tails on top of each one.
Wait. So usually when it's plated, it's one piece of filet. It's right. Probably about 3 inches or four inches diameter.
Yeah, 8-10 ounces, yeah. No, these are small. These were like almost like mini filets. There was two of them. And it had mini lobster tails, about 2 ounces a piece. And they didn't have the shell or anything. They were taken out of the shell, put on top of the fillets. And they had like a lemon butter sauce on the plate. It was actually very good. You know, filet mignon to me is kind of boring and it doesn't have much of a flavor. But, you know, it's certainly tender enough, and I don't really care because I'm not the steak guy. It doesn't matter.
See, it's funny. Kerry, the go-to is the filet mignon. I think I usually like something on the bone.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find many times when you do these steak restaurants that their lobster tail is overdone. It's many times dried out and very fibery. They usually season it too much. That's why I sort of like fresh lobster, because it's usually steamed and it's just
thank you, Captain Obvious, you know what I mean. But I don't get the lobster tail thing, because like you say, they're always frozen. Nobody uses fresh lobster tails, right? So they're all frozen. I mean, the better ones come from South Africa, the less better ones come from Brazil, or, you know, South America, Central America, and sometimes even over off the coast of Africa. But I don't know. I don't get it. They're always tough. A lot of times they're iodine-y to me.
Yes. You know,
you get that iodine kind of thing going on there. So I don't get the appeal. I mean, and, you know, I've been to, like, Tony Scotto has these steak restaurants all over, you know, Rare 650. I was in, I was Blackstone one night. There was a guy behind me, you know, sitting at the bar. Go figure. There's a bunch of tables behind me. This guy's got a lobster tail, like, the size of my head. You know, you had to see this thing. It was like, it had to be a pound and a quarter. It was crazy big, you know. And he's just chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing and chewing. I'm saying, yep, you know. So I go with you. I mean, I'm the fresh lobster guy. I mean, why would you, if you have these beautiful fresh lobsters right from here, right at the whole New England coast, you know, you're going to go to Brazil to get some frozen tail. You don't know how long it's been in the freezer. It could be there for 3 years, you know. I don't know. I don't get it.
It's funny, though, when Kerry and I share a lobster, I guess I'm very benevolent, if that's the right word. You know, I let her have the tail from both sides of the lobster. I'm so satisfied with their forward.
Guy.
Yeah, and then the gooey green stuff that and the roe that's in a female.
Yeah, no, it's there's nothing like it. I mean, I think, you know, listen, fresh, frozen, you know, give me fresh all day. You know, it's just I can't think of many things I would prefer to have frozen than fresh. But anyway, so we had that, and then, you know, would you like some dessert? No, I'm off sugar, and I'm not eating dessert. So I had a couple of glasses of interesting wine, nothing crazy. You know, usual big California Pinot Noir, you know, drank like a big California Pinot Noir. I find them sort of one-dimensional and a little bit extracted and big, juicy, fruity kind of. Nothing wrong with it if that's your taste. My tastes are a little different. I like a little more nuance in the wine. But, you know, everything was fine. Everything was really good, you know. I got the bill the first night. I don't know how that happened, but I did. But, you know, it's you get what you pay for. I mean, most of your entrees are in that $45, $50 range unless you know, drop down to chicken or something, you know. So they're not cheap. They're not they're pricey. But I got to tell you, I'm a Capital Grille fan. I think they do a great job. I think they run great restaurants, and you know, they're obviously deserving of the success that they have. They're well trained people, and you know, I wish my people were as well trained. And you know, probably my fault, but I can't get them. I have untrainable people. I say the same things to the same people every day I'm in the restaurant. It's almost comical, and I'm like, I forget about doing it and not doing it. Aren't you just tired of hearing me say it? I mean, you would think somebody would go, oh, no, not again. He's going to say it again. Let me just get it over with, you know. They sit there. What do you want me to do? Same thing I wanted you to do yesterday. I had a woman who worked for me for a long time in catering, right? We must have done 100 weddings together. Every time we got to the wedding under the tent, what do you want me to do? I don't know. How about the same thing you did the last 150 times we've done this? It's just, it's bizarre. I don't know if they're just testing me or whatever. Anyway, so the second night we were there, you know, I'm talking about restaurants today. It was kind of fun. We went to a place called Spoto's, which is, you know Spoto's?
No.
It's billed as an oyster bar, and they do have a somewhat limited selection of oysters. They have a huge oyster bar there, and the oysters are very good. I had them.
That's an interesting business model. You should probably consider that.
I was thinking about doing one of those, so I stopped in to get some research, you know. And, you know, the coolest thing that they had is they had a big, you know, behind every oyster bar, you have that thing with the crushed ice, you know, the oysters are on. They actually had the crushed ice falling out of the ceiling. They had somehow mounted an ice machine in the ceiling.
That's pretty intriguing.
It was so cool. It was the only thing from Spoto's I ever wanted to steal. And I said to my designer over at Kingfish, can you mount an ice machine in the ceiling? She's looking at me like, I'm out of my mind.
Yeah, but your ceiling has to be more than 20 feet.
It would be some drop, yeah. And I think that just, you know, getting it up there, the whole thing, she said, you know, Tom, really, stop. You know, all right, whatever, I'm sorry. You know? But we had gone there the last time we were there. We had a great meal. We went there this time, not so much.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't very good. In fact, it was borderline lousy, you know, so.
And what stood out to make it not a pleasant experience?
Well, Dave had a piece of swordfish that apparently, you know, came from the same people that the lobster tails come from. It was like, it was very iodine-y. It was the only flavor of the swordfish. You know, swordfish, when it's fresh, has that oiliness to it, you
yes.
know. This was kind of dried out and just blah, tasteless. He gave me a piece, and I was like, yeah, I get it, you know. I had, I think I had a grouper or a piece of snapper or
funny
something.
Funny you say that. When Kerry and I are down in Florida, I keep talking about Kerry.
Yeah.
But grouper, like even if we go for sushi,
yeah.
we'll go for a grouper roll.
Oh, yeah, I love grouper. It's a great fish. And the snapper down there is, you know.
And how do you describe that? Is it a flaky fish?
Yeah, grouper to me is almost like striped bass a little bit. It's kind of, it's like, you know, it's not flaky like a flounder would be, but it's got a little more body to it, but it's very white and mild, you know. Very pleasant fish, and it lends itself to a myriad of preparation, you know, I mean, because it's just such a, you know, canvas for you. So I had that, and it was kind of flavorless, and, you know, the sides were, it wasn't good. It just wasn't good. I had some raw oysters, which were fine, and Dave had, I don't know what he had for an appetite, crab cake, I think, and that was kind of, you know, shelly and a bunch of cartilage in it, and he just wasn't happy at all, you know. So we kind of crossed that off the list. And then the third night we're there, there's a place down there called Masseria. And it's this kind of high-end Italian restaurant that...
I'm interrupting for a second. Yeah. I just got an email from the Capitol Grill. So.
Oh, did you?
Big Daddy must be...
They're listening?
Listening. I don't get it.
Did they thank us for the plug?
That's so funny.
That's great. Who knew? Who knew we were being monitored? It's a good thing I didn't say anything like about old people going there or whatever.
So you were saying about the next restaurant.
Yeah, the next restaurant was, we decided to do an Italian thing. And I had seen this restaurant and we stopped in after we went to Spoto's. I said, let's stop over there and we'll have a drink and see what it's like. We'll check the menu out. So we sat at the bar. It was still early. It was like 8:30. And they had Pecorino by the glass, which I was like, whoa, impressed with, because, you know, Pecorino is kind of an odd Italian grape, one that I love personally.
Hey, listen, I'm not that smart. I thought you were talking about cheese.
Well, see, you can go to Masseria and have Pecorino squared. You can have a little order of Pecorino cheese with a glass of Pecorino on the side. It's Pecorino to the second power, you know. So I'm having my Pecorino and I'm looking through the menu and I got some really nice things on there, but all prepared by Chef Pino. And you know, Chef Pino's name comes up a lot on the menu. And I'm picturing this five-foot-five egomaniac.
His last name isn't Grigio, is it?
No. He's got, you know, the little pencil-lined mustache and all that.
Well, that's
hat.
Your buddy from the restaurant up here.
Yeah. It's, what's his name? Luigi Q.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was laughing, you know, and they had rabbit. They had some interesting things on there. So we went there the next night, and... But this really nice bartender, she was a young girl, probably in her 20s, very sweet, very accommodating, and you know, but they also had a wine preservation machine that I hadn't seen at the outside bar inside. So they had a lot of big wines in there. They had a Barbaresco, Barolo, you know, they had a Brunello, a couple of Brunellos in there. So of course I had to, you know.
Really? Brunello's is something you are
oh, yeah,
a
I
fan
like,
of?
I like the big Italian stuff, yeah. So you know, and Dave's a, you know, he's an Amstel guy, so of course I got the bill again because I'm drinking, you know, a $40 glass wine. He's drinking a $4 bottle Amstel. It's kind of unfair to stick him with that.
Does he know? At least go for the tap?
Oh, yeah. No. He goes bottles only, you know. But he's good. He's, you know, he doesn't care, really. But I feel guilty, you know, if I'm drinking that kind of wine, I don't want to put that, you know, kind of tab on him. But it was interesting. I had this ravioli appetizer, a small ravioli appetizer, which was really nice. You know, it's like a butternut squash with the brown butter and sage. Kind of a classic Italian preparation. It was very good. I'm trying to think what Dave had. I don't really remember what he had as an appetizer. But he really liked it. He said it was really good. And then he had some kind of like a scallopini of veal. that he absolutely loved. It reminded me of, you know, when you go to Italian restaurants and they have those 19 different ways to have veal. It was one of those. I don't remember which one. It was Zingaro or, you know, veal alla Louie or whatever.
And scallopino just basically means a thin slice of veal.
Yeah, thin slice. And I had rabbit. I had this braised rabbit in like a wine sauce with some root vegetables. It came out of a crock, you know, with a cover, the whole thing. It was really well done. Very well done. Yeah, nice. And a couple of hundred glasses of wine. And then we were back, back to the room. And then Bill Holden, who's the chef owner of Market Bistro and West End Cafe.
Yes.
He has a place in Naples. He's our third golf guy up here on Mondays, you know.
Oh,
so
okay.
He drove over to stay with us.
That's
tonight.
Cool.
So he played two rounds with us that morning. And that night we decided not to drive. It was by the time we got done, it was like 7 o'clock at night. So we all went back, took a shower. We met at the place. They have a restaurant there called Ironwood, you know, which was, I guess, the nod to the golf, the irons in the woods, you know. And it's built as a steakhouse. And it's kind of, you know, once you, when you've been to Capitol Grill, which I think is a very nice high-end steakhouse, this was kind of less than that. This was more Ruth Chrissy with better decor. But I ordered a crab cake, and they brought me a crab bisque instead, you know. But it turns out, I should go back to the front, because I walk in there, right, and this guy goes, Tom Shortell? And I said, oh, and I knew the face, and I couldn't place it. He goes, Nick Silvestri. Turns out Nick worked for me as a waiter back in the Lemongrass days in the late 90s. Yeah, and he had relocated to Florida. He's working in a restaurant. So I said, well, can we sit in your section, you know? So we get to his section, and so we all ordered, and, you know, I said I ordered this crab cake, which I almost never order, but there was nothing else on it that really interested me, so I said, I'll try that, you know? And they bring me this crock of crab bisque, which was kind of, I can taste base. You know, some people use bases, and what I mean, it's like bouillon cubes, you know? They sell these bases. You can get lobster base and shrimp base and chicken base and all of that, but there's a chemical flavor to it.
But isn't there also in a bisque usually like a sherry taste?
Yeah, there was sherry in this one also. But I could taste the base, you know, I could taste the chemical in it. I didn't like it much at all. And then he realized that he gave me the wrong thing, and Nick came out, oh, I'm so sorry, Tom, I don't care. It's no big deal, you know. It's an appetizer and a meal for the rest of my life. I mean, what
no,
does
no,
mean?
But it's funny. last week I had a chance to dine out on the Nautical Mile in Freeport, and I had a crab bisque or a seafood bisque, and mine happened to be pretty good. I enjoyed it to the last.
I liked them too when it made with the real article, you know. I mean, but when it was kind of a fake thing. So anyway, I had that. So he decides he's going to bring out the crab cake anyway, because I'll be out. I said, you don't have to. No, I'll get it. And it turns out it was terrible. It was a shredded crab.
No, when you have a crab cake, do you dip it in anything? Because a lot of times it's either tartar sauce or I can't say it. Remoulade.
Yeah.
Remoulade.
No, they had a mango and tomato salsa on there, which was fine, you know. But I didn't like it much at all. And then dinner came out. I had a grouper again, which was nice. It was kind of like with just a piccata kind of thing with capers or whatever. And both of my buddies had surf and turf. They had the filet mignon lobster, and neither one of them liked it much. So it was kind of, you know, so, but, you know, I felt good because we, you know, we overtipped Nick, and I hadn't seen him in a while. It was good to see him and catch up.
That's cool.
His brother used to work for me as a chef. His
brother
was, yeah, great guy. Great family. Nice people. His mother is one of the principals in Eddie's Pizza. In New Hyde Park.
Oh, that's a famous place. That's where you go for thin crust pizza.
Yeah.
I just met somebody the other night. That's so funny you're talking about it. We were actually at what used to be the Chalet in Roslyn is now called something else. It escapes me.
Yeah.
But the person that I met up with grew up in New Hyde Park, and I said, well, you must know about Eddie's. He said, know about Eddie's. I grew up on Eddie's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
so Eddie passed away, but it's still there.
Yeah. It's required reading for anybody who eats pizza in New Hyde Park. You know, you got to go there.
It's like eating, it's really a crisp, it's almost eating like pizza on a cracker.
Yeah, it's a matzo pizza. You know?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
It's heritage food on Long Island.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so last night we decided, you know, there was a couple of ways to go. There's a place called Kool-Aid down there, which looked like a little chainy to me, and I avoid chain places like the plague if I can. And there's a place called Gino's Ocean Grill. And when I hear names like, you know, Pasta Grill or Ocean Grill, I get a little worried, you know. And And that was a little further drive down the road. And it was a place that I had been curious about. We passed a couple of times called the Cooper. Always had a lot of people there, right? So I said, well, let's give this a shot and we'll see what happens. And, you know, we'll go there. If we don't like it, we'll sit at the bar. If we don't like the menu,
so
we'll
get what type of cuisine is at the Cooper?
The Cooper was kind of, you know, just an American restaurant. They had, you know, a little bit of everything. And, you know, it was surprisingly good. And it was the least expensive of all the restaurants we ate in. And, of course, Dave got the check. somehow he worked that out. And it was really good. I was impressed. They had a wine on the list I could drink, which I was a little worried about. They had a Trimbach Riesling, you know, that I was drinking by the glass. They had Amstel Light for Dave. He was thrilled. I don't remember what I ordered for an app. Oh, yeah, I had Korean barbecued ribs. And a pay on to Gene, you know, I ordered the Korean ribs.
A little homesick.
I was a little bit. And then Dave had, I think he had a crab cake again or something like that. And he was stealing my ribs, you know.
So wait, Korean ribs, I mean, are they on the bone or are they?
They were on the bone. Yeah, it was like a little, you know, little spare rib thing. You know, the Korean thing, names get thrown around loosely. They had some kind of a soy sauce dip, and the girl says, isn't it wonderful? And I didn't think it was. I thought it was terrible, actually. But, you know, the ribs themselves were good. I mean, they should have just left well enough alone. And they had, an amateur's attempt at kimchi there because, you know, my mother-in-law makes kimchi like she buries it in the backyard for 6 weeks, you know, whatever. So, but it was good. It was very good. And then I had of all things, I was up to here with fish. I had a short rib. You know, a braised short rib with root vegetables. That was very good. Yeah, he did a good job.
See, now that's interesting because,
Dave had fish that night.
But for variety, you went with two meat dishes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would have thought you might have gone to a pasta or something else.
I've been trying to stay away from pasta. I'm trying to, you know, get my waistline under 50, you know. So it's, as much as I love it, it's pasta. It's just, you got to eat it like the Italians. You got to get it in small doses. Like, when we go out, we'll split one, you know. But most of the pasta that I find in the restaurants, and mine included, for good reason, serve too much pasta. But if you don't, you know, you get yelled at by the people. You know, everybody's looking to make sandwiches out of linguine.
Well, I got
to
tell you, a group of the people from the station were over at Jewel the other day, and one of my buddies had some pasta. It was the squid ink pasta and loved it.
Loved it. That's one of my favorites. You know, it's funny. We don't sell a lot of pasta over there. And I don't know if it's because, you know, there are other things more interesting to people on the menu or if it's just, you know, people don't think of pasta in a place like that or whatever.
Well, your menu tortures me in a good way because it's just that mindset. I don't know if I want to go with a pasta because I want to keep this beautiful physique of mine.
Yeah, your body's a temple.
Yeah, of course. So I'm concerned about that. Most of the time, actually, I shy away from pasta, but because there's so many other interesting items on your menu, it's to me, it's tough.
Yeah, you know, at some point, I don't know if I'm done opening restaurants or not. We'll see. The employees are kind of finishing me off here, but, you know, I would love to do just a moderately priced but very hip, you know, pasta and wood burning pizza kind of a place, you know, where you could just come in, grab a salad, you know, have a split of pizza, split of pasta, and go home, you know. But interesting stuff. I mean, I'm tired of the same old pastas. And I got to believe that there's room for more interesting things out there.
Yeah, but your pasta is different. Again, you always talk about the red sauce Italian restaurants. But you have a couple of different, I think one of your pastas might be with a cream sauce.
Yeah, well, we do a couple of those.
And then there's one that's more in a broth.
Yeah, you know.
With different seafood or something.
We change them around. I mean, the seafood one is a little creamy. That's the one that has a little cream to it. And then we do, one of the other staples is I make a sausage there. You know, we make our own sausage there and, I don't case it, you know, put it in casing. We just leave it crumbling.
Yeah, isn't that
right?
It's the sausage and broccoli or something?
No,
broccoli rabe or something?
No, we don't use that. That's kind of a classic, but it's basically pasta with spicy veal sausage, tomato, basil, and Reggiano, you know. And I've been dragging that one around for 20, 25 years, you know, but it sells like crazy. So, you know, why change it? Yeah. And then, you know, the squid ink pasta, I mean, to me, that's the most flavorful pasta ever, you know, is the, I don't mean the sauce, just the squid ink itself is a nice little flavor.
And I don't remember if you serve it the same, but I know that you brought that over to Kingfish, because when I was there for my initial dining experience, I had the the squid ink pasta there.
Yeah, we were doing that. It didn't sell over there for some reason.
I saw it's not on the menu anymore.
No, no, you took it off. But it's really funny how different neighborhoods on Long Island, you know, I can sell things here that I can't sell there. Wines included, you know, both beer, food and wine. You can see different. I think there's different ethnicities in certain neighborhoods probably contribute somewhat to that. But it's not only that. It's just odd. I don't really know what the reason is. I don't know what the answer is. Like, my daughter can sell little oddball wines over at Kingfish that I can't sell at Jewel.
Really?
And I can sell expensive wines by the glass that she can't sell over there, you know? And, I mean, the demographic's pretty much the same. I mean, you know, the people that live in that building are pretty well-oiled. I mean, you know, some of those apartments are $8,000, $9,000 a month. So, you know, that's you're in a high-rent district at that point, you know? But it's really, you know, I don't know what the answer is or why, you know. But the Cooper was great. I mean, we had a fun bartender. I think she had a little stake in the place. She was way too concerned to be an employee. But place was mobbed, man. It was crazy. I said, I guess you're in high season now. She's, yeah. You know, by Mother's Day, it starts to thin out a little bit, you know. But I can see why. The food was very good. And it was probably a third less than any of the other restaurants we went to, you know, which I thought was, you know, you know, from a business standpoint, I'm like, I'm goose it up a dollar or two. What the hell? You know what I mean? But it's probably why they're busy. You know, that's probably why they were, you know, so successful. So if you're in Palm Beach Gardens, the Cooper is, you know, highly recommended. I mean, they do really super work there, and they don't charge you that much. I mean, it doesn't get any better than
that's cool. I got to share a couple of stories with you. So I guess the Saturday night that you were traveling, friends had said, let's get together in the Wantagh area. And I said, oh, then we got to visit our friends over at
Blackbird. Yeah.
So I call up and I say, you know, I need a reservation for Saturday night. And they go, so, you know, we're booked. I threw your name around in the radio show. Frank was able to help me out.
Nice.
I didn't know. I forgot Frank's name, but I had remembered Chris was the chef.
Sure.
So he said he would help me out, and he did. And then, of course, there was babysitting issues with the other couple, so we had to cancel. But we went to the following Tuesday, and you talk about cheers and everybody knowing your name. You know, again, Frank is just so engaging over there. And again, this is Blackbird, which is just west of the Wantagh Parkway on Merrick Road in Belmore, Wantagh area.
Yeah.
And Chris was in the back, you know, cooking, smiling, you know, saying hello, whatever. But I recently started desiring old fashions. And lo and behold, they have 19 versions of old fashioned on the menu. And we happened to go with some law enforcement friends of ours that the other couple. And it's like a stomping grounds of the local police.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was the food is great there.
Yeah, he does a nice job.
You know, for us, we love to do small plates.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's what we did. We convinced the other couple, and you know, next thing you know, a couple of old fashions and a selection of food. It was really, really, really good.
Yeah, we got it with Permigrin, you know?
Yeah, no, it was great. I had to be the voice of reason. The other couple had Ubered there. And I was the designated driver, so I played it cool, but it was very, very nice, and definitely going to go back to visit Frank and Chris.
Yeah, great guys. I mean, Chris is a talented young kid, and he does nice food over there. I haven't been there in a while because we moved out of the area. You know, I'm out east now, so I'm exploring new things, which I'll report. I actually went to there's a Bistro 25 East. Bistro 25 is this little place in Sayville that we found that, you know, had, you know, decent food. It was fun. It was nice to eat at the bar there. You know, we're bar people anyway. So they opened up a second place out in, I guess it's Blue Point. I'm a little shaky on the towns out there, but I think it's Blue Point. And same thing. Great food, you know, fun place, not expensive, like a little bistro kind of pubby thing, you know. Real cool.
So if you see me being a little more reserved, you know, I was like so excited, you know, getting ready to do my taxes. And an idea had entered my head that...
not pay him?
yeah. No, well, I actually shy away from that, but I enjoy paying for a nice meal, but... I sort of had this thought that, you know, we're in the business. If I'm doing this as research, I should be able to write off my dining expense.
I agree with you.
And my accountant tells me, well, you're about a year to 18 months too late. Because there's no more business, there's no more deductions for food and entertainment.
I know.
And I'm probably not stating it exactly right, but I surely thought this was going to be a good year.
Listen, we saw a drop, you know, when next to Three Martini Lunch years ago, and now that, you know, they're taking it all away. You know, we see it in the restaurants. We see the downturn a little bit. It's increasingly harder and harder. The restaurant business is getting, it was always difficult. It's becoming impossible. I mean, you know, between the payroll and what everybody's charging and the fact that, you know, people are screaming about the prices all the time. It's like, well, what do you want us to do? I mean, give it to you. You know, I can't operate at a loss. Won't be here
of
long, you know?
Not.
So it's kind of hard, but you know, you read these, you know, reviews on Yelp and Tri-State Restaurant Group where I think it's overpriced. Based on what?
Right.
You know, I mean, overpriced for you maybe, but you know.
I just thought it would be, you know, we really do talk about food.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be a nice deduction. But now I'm wondering, you know, we're radio, so it doesn't matter that we come here in our pajamas.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the world of television and stage, I guess they get to write off their costumes, which essentially is their clothing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's true. I mean, we get clothing stuff, tax deductible stuff for us because, you know, we're constantly using the chef coats and stuff. But anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll pay some bills. We'll come back because I have a restaurant that I rediscovered after 30 years.
Wow.
And still going strong, and I want to tell you about it. So we'll do that when we come back.
A Tom Shawdell flashback.
Yes.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell. Chef, author, and restaurateur.
Okay, so I'll set the background for this. In 1971, after a three-minute discussion with my guidance counselor, I decided to go to chef school. Right? And I still hold him responsible for the mess he got me into here, you know, with all this restaurant stuff. But so I arrived in New Haven in 71, September of 71, Culinary Institute, which is now in Hyde Park, New York, upstate. Was originally in New Haven, Connecticut. And so we had this list of classes, and you had, you know, Asian cuisine, you had French cuisine, you had table service, you had this and the other thing. So we get the table service class, and it was like 8 or 9 days long. And the instructor's name was Hugo Bua, H-U-G-O, Hugo, and last name Bua, B-U-A. And he was this very suave, very good-looking, 30-ish-something Italian guy, who knew a tremendous amount about the dining room and service and all French service, you know, tableside cooking, Caesar salad, the table. That was still in vogue at the time. That was all the big restaurants like the Lincoln Inn in Rockville Center. They were all doing that stuff.
Oh, wow, that's a name
from the past. Yeah, right. So he was enmeshed in all of that stuff. He was very good at it. And he was a teacher. And I got to like him. He was a very nice guy. And he had a restaurant in Cheshire, Connecticut called Hugo's Continental. That I used to work in once in a while on the weekends because I befriended him. So it turns out, he left after the first year, kind of lost sight of him or whatever, and didn't know. And then all of a sudden, he turns up on Long Island, and he opens this place called Stressa, Cafe Stressa, but not the one in Manhasset, The one that was, I think it was in Smithtown somewhere.
That's right.
Terry
Cafe
Road.
Stressa. I forget the gentleman, the proprietor there.
Yeah, I can't think of his
Ron
name.
Ron or something?
No.
Whatever.
Anyway, so Hugo was quite the character. I mean, he was maybe the best ladies' man I ever knew. I mean, he had that Julio Iglesias look to him.
Wow.
You know? He was very, very, and very smooth, and he was just phenomenal. And he had all these women chasing him all over the place. He was completely crazy. He was a lot of fun. And he had a brother called Mario. And Mario opened up 38 years ago Mario's Restaurant on Motor Parkway in Hapag. Now, all the gangster guys that I used to know from coming into the restaurants always used to go to Mario's, you know. And I got kind of waylaid about, I don't know, 30 years ago into taking over the kitchen at the old Colony Hill. Of course, a bunch of these Bubblegum Wise guys that I knew were going to buy this place in the anticipation that gambling was coming to Long Island. So they kind of got involved in this.
Where was that? That name?
Colony Hill was right where Islandia, where the, was it the Windwatch Marriott is now.
Okay.
It was a hotel that was bought and owned by the Electrical Workers Union or something, and they built it with anticipation that gambling was going to come. They were going to put a casino there. So these lunatic guys that used to follow me around in restaurants bought this, and my friend Vinny, who's since passed away, said to me, you know, I'd like you to come and work for me. I said, yeah, I'm kind of happy where I am. He goes, I don't think you heard me. I'd like you to come work for me. I said, I don't think you heard me. I like it where I am. He says, I'll triple your salary. I said, when do I start? You know, kind of thing. So it was just ridiculous.
Oh, you were an entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you know, I'm not stupid, you know. So anyway, long story short, he used to talk about this place, Mario's, all the time, you know. And I didn't connect Mario and Hugo. I didn't know they were brothers over there at the time. So this is the kind of place they wanted. It's not what I do, but, you know, so we go to Mario's and you know, it's this old-world Italian place. And, you know, I'm looking at Vinny like he's out of his mind. I said, this isn't what I do, Vinny. You know, you got the wrong guy. No, no, you can do this. I can't do that. It's not, not only can I don't want
to. You can drink the Brunelli.
I can tell you stories about this restaurant. I mean, I was there for about 8 months. I couldn't take it anymore. These guys were completely out of their minds, you know. But anyway, I was introduced to Hugo. Hugo and Mario, Mario's Restaurant. So that was it. You know, I ate there once or twice with Vinny, and I told him, I said, you know, I can't eat spaghetti with you because every time one of you guys gets shot, you get a mouthful of linguine. You know what I mean? If you want to go have sushi somewhere, I'm your boy. I can't do this anymore. I'm a little worried, to tell you the truth. You know. So anyway, that was it. I hadn't seen it. And I passed it 1,000 times and never really thought about it. So P.S., Gene and I move into the area out there. I was coming home from Florida, and I was on my way back to Jewel. I was going to check and see what was going on. So I really didn't feel like going in. I just got off the plane. I'm like, man, I'm going to get aggravated.
Would you fly into MacArthur?
Yeah. So I said, well, let's just stop and get something to eat. And she wasn't feeling really well. She says, well, I don't want to go. I wanted to go to Mirabelle or something. I don't want to drive that far. I said, okay, well, we're right here. Let's go to Marriott. You know, have you been to Sempre Vivola? Because there's a bunch of restaurants on that strip. So he turned over. I said, well, let's try Mario. I haven't been here in a long time. So I walk in. Mario, I mean, didn't recognize me. I haven't seen him in 30 years, you know. And so I said, is there any room at the bar? And he says, no, but I can get you a nice table. So he brings us to a table in the corner. He says, you got to view everybody in the room. He's just the quintessential maitre d' guy, you know. Very lovely guy, you know. So we're sitting there, and the waiters come over. There's three or four of them. What can I get you? You know, can I get you something to drink? You know, a martini, perhaps a Bellini, da-da-da. I'll have a wine list. Oh, we have a great Pinot Grigio. Easy there, Rambo. I'll take care of this. You know? So I'm looking, you know, so we order the wine, this, that, and the other thing. And a guy comes over and recites the specials. Now, this has always been a source of my amusement, you know, the Italian special recitation that happens usually with a Spanish accent because most of the waiters are Spanish, pretending to be Italian. We got an Indian guy, which to me, I can't listen to. You know, it's like Peter Sellers to me, man. As soon as I hear that accent, I start to giggle. And it's not, I'm not making fun of anybody. I just find, when they do that, it just makes me laugh, you know. So he starts reciting all these specials, and Gene is kicking me under the table. And I'm like, I got my face in a napkin on one of these. I'm trying to wipe my mouth. So we're basically having a lot of fun, you know, at everybody else's expense, of course. But, you know, there was no malice there anyway. So it turns out we order an escargot, which was fine. You know, it's usually what escargot is. It comes out with the little bowl with the escargot in it with the parsley, butter, and garlic, you know. Then we split an order of pasta, which was like a very fine angel hair linguine, a cappellini with shrimp and tomato and stuff. It was fabulously good.
Was it more of a broth or?
No, it had tomatoes. It was like a butter sauce on it. Okay. It was really good. It's just really well done. And then we split a, you know, because we split most of the stuff anyway. I don't eat that heavy anymore. We split a halibut that was same thing with, you know, chopped tomato, diced tomatoes on it, and like a lemon butter thing.
Shoot,
you know?
Back to the pasta a second. Are you the type that will put cheese on it?
Not on. I don't put cheese on seafood pastas. I put cheese on tomato and meat pastas because I think the cheese overpowers the flavor of the seafood. Anyway, so it was great. It was just, you know, and she's going because, you know, she wants to not like it, you know, because I suggested it. You know, kind of thing. So she goes, it's really good. You know, we got to go back there again real soon because this could be the one. This could be the one, you know, in the neighborhood, the go-to Italian place. I'm like, yeah, totally, you know. So the other night we're driving around again. Oh, P.S. Now, Mario comes over to me about halfway through the meal. He goes, I'm sorry, Tom, I didn't recognize you, you know, a big shot restaurant owner like you. What are you doing out eating somebody else's? So we were talking for a while. So I said, you know, your brother was my table service instructor. And he's really, you know, so we were reminiscing and, you know, about Vinny and that whole the gang that couldn't shoot straight guys, you know, what happened with this guy? He passed away. That guy, you know, they had one guy, Tony Meatballs, they used to call him. He was like 400 pounds and he died in his girlfriend's apartment. And they had to get the body out of there before the wife found out. So they had to get a hole in the rigging, got piano mover to get him out. It was like, you can't even imagine.
You can't make up these stories.
You can't. It was like hilarious. Anyway, so long story short, he's you know, reminiscing and da-da-da. Bids us good night. We leave, right? So we went back last week. And it's really kind of an interesting restaurant because when you walk in there, it doesn't really evoke Italy so much as it evokes like quiet and tranquility. I mean, he's got these hand-carved doors that are really kind of ornate and beautiful. If that's your taste, that's not mine. But and then you go in, but he's got carpet. You don't see restaurants with carpet anymore because, you know, carpets get dirty. You got to replace them all the time. They're a pain in the ass, really. So, but he's got these tufted walls and like a low drop ceiling. The place is... It's muted, you know. Most of the restaurants that I'm in lately has this cacophony of sound all the time because of the hard surfaces, you know. But it's muted, tablecloths, you know, real old world, you know. They even have a Garadona making like flaming bananas flambe for two. Old, old world stuff, you know. And lo and behold, again, I mean, we split a pasta again. This was a guacinale, you know, like a linguine with guacinale, which is a tomato sauce with pig jowl, like pork jowl. It's almost like bacon, you know, smoked. It's good, very good, you know, onions, whatever.
And what is that called?
It's called guanciale.
Matriciana
is what they call it on the menu, but guanciale is the pork jowl. Anyway, so it was just great again. And we had an appetizer. What the hell do we have for an appetizer? I can't remember now. That was good. And then we split a salmon maracchiare, they call it, you know, mm-hmm. with the tomato broth and some clams and mussels. Just everything was exactly what it was supposed to be, on point and really well done. And she goes, well, yeah, this is it, you know. So it's gene approved and, you know, we'll be seeing him frequently.
So in your absence, there was a culinary hero passed away.
Mike Maroney, yeah.
And I'm curious on your takes. I had heard about the restaurant. Right. Being a Nassau County guy, I had never dined there. But I guess they were known for their tasting menu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had, Mike was an interesting study because he had a place called Mirepoix in Glencoe for a while. I used to eat there once in a while and he opened up Maroni's, and Maroni's was kind of a sort of an Italian restaurant. He had a takeout side, you know, he makes these meatballs that, everyone loves, his grandmother's meatballs or whatever. He was selling them in a crock. And it became a thing, you know. So he would sell these crocks of meatballs. And he would sell trays of, you know, rigatoni with sausage and broccoli rabe and stuff like that. But it wasn't really happening for him there. I think he was probably too expensive for that kind of thing. So the second half became a restaurant. He was doing meals all the time. And I think he's like everybody else. He got tired of the, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, I can't eat the other thing. And he had this... chef's tasting menu on there all the time, and he just kind of went more and more that way, and then finally completely that way, which I totally respect him for, because, you know, to take a stand like that is a bit risky, you know, and he pulled it off. Good for him, you know, good for him. I knew Michael a long time. I know Mike, I'd probably go back 25 years with him. We weren't very close. I didn't know him well, you know. I knew his wife better than him. His wife, Maria, very nice lady. And, yeah, he had a good thing going on there. And he was about, you know, he'd stopped last year at Amano and said hello. He came in for dinner. And he told me he just bought a house in Southold. And we were going to be neighbors. And he was opening a meatball place in Southold. You know, he had a lot of stuff going on. He had a thing going on in the city where he sold his meatballs out of a storefront in the city.
Oh,
you know?
Really?
Yeah, and I was on the plane when I got the news of coming back, you know, and I guess they said it was a medical event in a pool.
Yeah, they never really elaborated, but
yeah.
I know a lot of people found themselves close to them, I guess, by virtue of dining at the restaurant or hearing stories or reviews of the restaurant. So it'll be interesting, I guess, to see if it continues, if his wife is able to move forward and keep doing it.
Yeah, they opened last Wednesday again for business.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, the problem with the name on the restaurant is, you know, when the name's gone, you know, it's like Jerry Hayden was trying to sell me North Fork Table. You know, but is North Fork Table North Fork Table without Jerry Hayden, you know? Is Jewel by Tom Shodell worth the same amount of money as if it's, you know, Jewel by, you know, John Smith? I don't know. You know, maybe more, but, you know, it's certainly not the same.
We know the original Cool Fish was not the same as the subsequent Cool Fish.
Yeah, well, the subsequent guy was, you know, he should be in a different business, I think. But yeah, it was sad with Mike, because Mike was only 57 years old, I think. He was just a young guy, you know. So I'm assuming it was a heart attack or a stroke or something, you know, that felled him. And then, you know, being in a pool when it happens is not a great place to be, you know. So, but yeah, it was a shock. It was a shock and a loss, you know. We've lost a couple of good ones. I mean, Hal, I don't know if you remember my chef, Hal Goldman. The hardest working guy I ever met in my life. Like,
God. You've always talked of him.
Oh, what a sweetheart. He was so funny, too. He was the same size. We went to a wedding together. He had his bar mitzvah suit on. It still fit, you know? And it was like he never gained a pound. It was hilarious, you know?
Wow.
Just a hardworking, wonderful, cheerful, great guy. Yeah, he's just a sweetheart. Yeah, this business will make you sick, you know?
So here, I'm interested to hear your take on this. This is totally unscripted, just throwing this out to you. So I'm out with Kerry the other night, and she goes, I'm thinking of going vegan.
Oh.
And I said, it's interesting. She's going to a continuing ed course and learning about it, and I was intrigued. She told me that this past Wednesday was going to be another session. You know, I said, hey, I'm actually very, you know, I'm quizzical about it. And then I guess in my own mind, I got it confused with being a vegetarian.
Oh.
And when, you know,
I
you
made that
start
mistake.
Talking about different things, because then, you know, I guess as a vegan, dairy is no good. Eggs
right.
are no good.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking about, you know, being a vegetarian. And as it turned out, Kerry invited me to go to the course this past Wednesday, and my dad had been not feeling well. He had been in the hospital. He was coming home, so I decided to spend some time with him. But I'm intrigued. She left the class, you know, with a lot of ideas. And what came together in my head is I was watching a culinary show on TV, and they were talking about sushi. And I guess a lot of sushi is fish-oriented.
Sure, yeah.
But there's a lot of negativity about fish as a category of food today. One is it's being over-farmed, I guess is a description. So there's not enough of it. So they're, I guess, coming up with ways that are not as healthy to provide for more fish. And there's also concerns about, I guess, mercury in eating too much fish. So now there's a growing segment of the food market that is quasi-seafood. It's all vegetable-based. So all of a sudden, this being a vegetarian wasn't so far-fetched. And, I mean, they were talking about, you know, salmon that was made out of some sort of marinated cucumber and maybe carrot and that type of thing. But that brought me back to my youth. My dad worked on Canal Street, and there used to be vegetarian restaurants.
Sure.
And you'd go in and you'd have mock chopped liver. It was like Jewish So it was Jewish dishes. They'd have mock gefilte fish, you know. Well, again, everything was vegetable-based.
Gefilte fish is mock.
Well, yeah, but they were making it without the fish.
Yeah.
So I got, you know, very intrigued, but I'm just curious what your thought is. First of all, the fact that, you know, now there's all this, faux fish product, and it's supposedly a really, really, really growing part of the food market. And if you go to a trade show, it's supposedly very prevalent.
Well, they've been, you know, vegans have been trying to imitate the flavors of meat for a long time. So why not fish? That's just a natural extension of what they're doing. I look at vegans like if vegetarians are the Muslims of the food world. Vegans are the ISIS movement.
Well, here's the reality of my life. I don't stay home and cook often. So most of the time I'm dining out.
Right.
But so I said, what's the normality of going on a diet like this and being social? I mean, again, we joke about it all the time, but if I go to Jewel and the steak Diane,
yeah.
I'd like some steak Diane, but I'd like it made out of vegetables.
Yeah,
you can't do that. So it intrigued me to the point that how do people survive in a social environment? And so much of eating out is social, but again, with all these dietary restrictions. So looking at it from the other view, again, we know, because you've been mm-hmm. very boisterous about how it affects you.
Mm-hmm.
But how does the individual absorb themselves into dining out and being able to not be a problem?
Yeah, I think it's incumbent on the restaurant to have a vegetarian dish or two. I mean, I don't see any problem with that, because you can get really creative with that. And that's kind of fun for me. I have interest in not doing that. My problem comes in when they start to just, you know, rearrange the whole menu and everything has to accommodate me. Well, not really. I mean, you know, when they come to these tasting menus that I do, you know, for charity, well, I don't eat this, I don't eat that, I don't eat that. Well, what are you doing here? I mean, this isn't for you. You know, it's like me going to a hockey game complaining I'm bored. I mean, you know, I knew I was going to be bored on the way in, you know.
But what's funny is that I remember my daughter actually had gone vegetarian at one point. So at a restaurant, it would be not unusual for her go-to dish to be penne alla vodka.
Yeah, sure.
However, very common for penne alla vodka, the sauce to be having bacon. Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and again, so I guess you have to just be very alert and strategic, because I guess human nature would be, I'm a vegetarian, I order the penne alla vodka and there's pieces of meat in it. Well, this shouldn't be. Well,
yeah.
I guess you have to pay attention and...
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it's incumbent on you. I mean, it's not incumbent on everybody else. That's the thing. I think that, you know, if you take responsibility for your diet, fine, you know what I mean? But it's like when you go into a steakhouse and expect everybody to go running down the block and buy some broccoli for you and come back and cook it. That's when it starts to get a little bit, you know, I think, out of control. You know, go to the places where, you know, you research before you go. I mean, there's vegan restaurants out there. There's places that serve vegan dishes. You know, that's what you're looking for.
I guess you have to be, reasonable also.
Yeah.
If I was going to the Capitol Grill and everybody else was having filet mignon, maybe I would ask for a dish of vegetables. You know, there's three or four of the different
sides
or whatever. And be reasonable that, you know, again, I don't want to make this confrontational.
Right.
I'm out to have a good time and social, so let's go with the flow. But again, it's just so funny that in the guise of wanting to be healthy, and we all want to be healthy, we all want to live forever.
Sure.
So we want to cut down on our processed foods and I guess high sugar content foods.
Yeah, yeah.
but it's not easy.
I don't mind the vegetarian vegan thing. It's the sanctimony that irritates me. You know, it's the this isn't higher evolution. This is just a diet plan. That's all it is, and it's fine. You know what I mean? I mean, I kind of eat that way a lot of times. You know, I don't eat a lot of red meat. You know, I'm more fish and vegetables guy. But you know, if you're strictly vegetarian or strictly vegan, which is even harder, then you should probably, you know, gravitate to those places that cater to strictly vegan people instead of coming to the other places and expecting everybody to jump through hoops on a Saturday night when they're very busy to accommodate your one, you know, idiosyncratic diet, you know. That's the problem that I think we have in the restaurants. It's not the fact that you're eating well. You know, we don't hate you, but it's you're throwing a wrench into the whole movement here, and we're trying to, you know, get this
food
out.
It's funny. You know, most places in my mind actually don't get it right with steak. I'm a big tenderloin. And there's nothing worse than a very tough piece of tenderloin.
Oh,
so
yeah.
if I'll shy away from steak at a restaurant and go for, you know, other things.
Sure.
I guess fish, chicken.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we're going to have to go. Vegetarian or not, we have to leave.
Again, a week without you, and I just have so much to talk about.
That's great. A quick hour. So we're going to leave with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important in pizza as sex in pizza. And eat whatever you want. See you next week.